Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
But before we get into the show, if you like the SDR show and you want to have amazing sex, we want to tell you about a popular sexual enhancer, the Promescent Delay Spray, that's been used by over a million men and is clinically proven to help you last longer in bed. So it takes the edge off, it lowers the sensitivity, so you don't have to worry about finishing too soon. Just better sex guaranteed, no pesky subscription required. It's easy to use, it helps you last longer, and it gives you more confidence. What more could you ask for? So just go to promescent.com. That's promescent.com. There is not even a promo code. It don't matter. You have a 60-day money-back guarantee. You could feel confident. You can know you last longer. You want to have a little more excitement, look and feel more manly. You go to promescent.com. That's what you should do, and do it now.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? On this episode, Eric Martin of Mr. Big joins us, performs live, and even does a little bit of that song we know, we love, and we all wanted to hear. Really cool dude, really cool interview. If you're a Mr. Big fan, you could have heard this show 5 days earlier and commercial-free if you are subscribing to the Gas Digital Network. Just go to gasdigitalnetwork.com, use the code SDR, and you will get a 7-day free trial, 20% off, and access to every single episode that we've ever done, and 20-something other shows as well. All in HD, all in commercial-free. Try it out for 7 days. You don't like it, just cancel. Tons of bonus content up there, forums, live chats, so much going on over at Gas Digital Network. James Madden joins me on this episode, and right now here it is, Eric Martin of Mr. Big on the SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the hoe. It's weed, I'm beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, it's fart, you need to know. The SDR Show. Let's go.
It is the SDR Show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I said rock and roll show. Rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me once again with a made bed. Why? Because I yelled at him before we went on the air. It is James Madden. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Look, the bed was quasi. I'm not good at it anyway, so sometimes it's going to be a little raggly around the edges like I am as a person. It's fine. It's like the Neil Young of beds.
It wasn't even close to being made. It wasn't. Did you just wipe your mouth on your pillow, Eric?
I cleaned that pillow.
Probably been sick for 3 years.
Disgusting. Don't invite me to your house.
First of all, it started off with sex, drugs, and rock and roll, which was a complete omen. It's, you know, that's you've already put the kibosh on.
All right, fair enough.
My mouth with a pillow. I didn't bite the pillow.
Right. Fair enough. Fair enough.
That is fair enough.
I had Shannon producing. Shannon was a little bit feeling a little down, but she's already smiling. So I'm glad you're feeling a little bit better, Shannon.
I mean, how can it not make me happy to see someone wipe their mouth on their pillow?
Pretty rock and roll.
Quite honest. Great.
I was looking for something.
Lightning strikes.
Now, let me ask you this. Before I can introduce you fully, my question is this. You realized you had to wipe your mouth, right? Did you look in front of you and say, I have nothing. I got a pillow to my right. I might as well do that. Was there any conscious thought of it?
I looked around the room. There was no tissue. I could hear. I have a sunflower. That's next.
Oh, if you do that next. Yeah.
That would be cool. That might make you look very yellowish and like, I don't know, might add a little nice hue to your skin color.
Might cure. Yellow and white. Really white. All right.
What if you were in public, like on the street, and you didn't have something? Are you one of the dudes who'll just throw it down?
No.
I can't do that. I've always been jealous of that.
I've done it, man. I don't feel good about it. And I make sure there's no women around, but I do this goddamn thing.
Okay, so if you see me on stage a couple times, like I've watched a couple YouTube videos of me in Japan with Mr. Big. And I'm sweating and I'm on stage and I'm like wiping my face on Billy's T-shirt. And the same thing, I did the same thing to Pat. So I'm not opposed to, like, I could walk down the street and just, like, any stranger and just wipe my face on.
Oh, wow. I would pay to see that. All right. Let's do the official intro. You came into my studios. I couldn't believe it, by the way. It's almost 20 years ago that you came into the old radio show studios of the tour bus, and you actually performed when your solo album was out. You did I'm Going Sane, and you did Wild World Live in the studio. And I came out to see you guys, saw you guys a few times. The band Mr. Big, you're also in a really cool band right now called Avantasia, which is like superstar rock and roll operatic. It's really a wild thing to see. We'll get into that as well. It is Eric Martin from Mr. Big. How are you, sir?
Good.
That'd be great. At the end of the interview. Thank you so much.
Hey, I mean, I don't remember you having that Asian, the Japanese fusion thing and behind you in your last, in our last meeting.
Oh, no, I don't think I did. But do I look Asian to you is what you're saying?
It's your wall.
Oh, that. Oh, yeah. No, that. Yeah, that's because I'm home right now. Well, in honor of the of you being so big in Japan, I wanted to get a little Japanese vibe behind me.
You are quick, Ralph. Quick.
It is crazy. But, you know, I wasn't going to get into that right away, but let's kind of talk about that for a second just because it organically happened. Mr. Big and you, but Mr. Big, one of the biggest bands in Japan ever, and I don't think people realize that. I know at one point, I don't know if it's still the case, but at one point, you guys were outselling the Beatles in Japan. It's crazy how big you guys were in Japan.
I don't know about the Beatles, but...
There was a point. I remember seeing that article, you guys, for maybe it was only for a year, but it was the case. When did that happen? Like, how did you notice, wait a minute, what's going on here? And do you attribute it to anything specific?
It started out in 89 when Billy Sheehan went over to Japan to sort of do clinics and mm-hmm. talk about this new band that he had. And he was just like, okay, you know, just you wait. And when we, and he, you know, he's had so much success. Well, I think he's had some success prior to Mr. Big. They all knew him over there, you know, mm-hmm. And Paul Gilbert as well, just like a budding young gun guitar slinger back in 89. And then when our band got together, we played over there. I would say like we played 4, 5, 6 shows at places called Club Cheetah, Kawasaki. Mm-hmm. They make motorcycles, you know, and really small clubs. And it was just fantastic. And we had tons of, you know, fan letters, and there was no emails and cell phones back then. They didn't create them yet. And constantly writing back and forth and almost becoming friends with these folks and mm-hmm. campaigning over the years from 89 all the way till now, I guess. Just, I don't know why it is. They just latched onto us. It's a hard rock and roll band, has a couple acoustic songs here and there, but I think we were just, we were there in their face constantly. We were doing tons of promo. We, you know, the bands that go over there and they have a great time. I mean, it's like kind of a rock and roll paradise in a way. They go, oh my God, we're so huge in Japan. Every band says that. Right. And they go, we'll be back. And they never do come back because it is so bloody expensive to mm-hmm. actually do it. And we kept going back and forth and campaigning. And I don't know. I really don't know. I can't tell you the fountain of youth right now.
Fascinating. I'm sure you know this, but every single Mr. Big record after the first one was a top 10 record in Japan, which is just crazy. You know, it's amazing that, because it's not just like the first and second record, every record has sustained that level of popularity in Japan. It's insane. But anyway, I want to get to a couple of current things right now, which I find fascinating. I love what you're doing right now, which is you're on tour with PJ Farley and Steve Brown, who were from Trickster, as well as Joey Quesada, who was in ZO2, right? And you're out doing Mr. Big and Trickster songs. Do you do covers as well, like other than the covers you've done with Mr. Big, or is it just an amalgam of those two?
Why should we do covers?
I mean, makes sense.
Playing, we're our own cover band, you know?
Yeah, I guess that's true, right?
We're just having a good time just doing something, you know? I mean, our Trickster's not doing shit nowadays. Right. And Mr. Big, you know, ever since... when Pat passed away, we did a tour of Europe, and I think we went to Australia with Extreme, and we did some clubs actually. Mainly overseas, and mm-hmm. we did a few in the States, but we haven't done anything since 2018, mm-hmm. and so. You know, I mean, everybody says, do a record or do a, what do you call it?
Acoustic tour or whatever, yeah.
Not acoustic tour. I've done thousands of acoustic tours, actually, after that, too. I mean, just to do something. But, and I actually prefer playing acoustic, you know, so I don't have to scream over Steve Brown's guitar. But I do have a great time with those guys. They're so funny. They're really talented.
Yeah, PJ and Steve have both done this show. I know them both probably as long as they know you, but also Joey Quesada, ZO2.
Oh, great.
We were, and it's sad that, what's his name? David passed away, right? But the first ZO2 radio interview was on my old radio show. They got that gig with Kiss. For those that don't know, ZO2 was basically an unknown band. They sent their demo into Kiss, and their first tour was opening for Kiss, which is, they were an unknown band, which is insane. And then they had that show that Big J, my other co-host, was on called, the name of the
Z-Rock.
Show. Z-Rock. And Joey Quesada.
It's my collection. I love that.
Yeah, it's really wild. Yeah, so really just, and I just love those guys. And Steve Brown is out with Def Leppard sometimes. PJ Farley's in Raw. It just, it's a great amalgam of different people. It's really cool. I'm sorry. This year is actually the 30th anniversary. It's hard to believe of Lean Into It, which was the huge second record for you guys.
Yeah.
I know there was like this release of limited singles and vinyls and like single releases and stuff for the album around that. But did you plan? I mean, anything else that was planned? Had COVID not hit, was there anything on the deck that you were going to do?
No. You mean like big shows?
Not necessarily, even like a get together or a something. You know, it is a big.
Not really. Okay. Not really. I wish I could. I know.
Fair enough.
I go back to wiping my face on this pillow.
Buying tissues, was that planned at any point? Sometimes you gotta buy tissues. Don't let COVID get in the fucking way of that. Get the goddamn tissues.
You guys are you're the East Coast guys, right?
Yeah.
East Coast. You never seen a guy. I mean, like guys walking around the streets in New York City, like all those like kind of crazy ass people, and a guy wipes his face on a pillow and you guys fucking freak out. I think,
by the way, the context is a little different versus some crazy homeless guy walking down the street or a respected rock star in a Zoom interview.
Also, you're so clean cut.
I own that pillow. I know where that pillow's been.
But you look so clean and wonderful, and I mean that sincerely. Like, if we had Iggy Pop up here, we'd be pissed if he didn't, like, shoot rockets in that. Like, we would expect that from, like, Iggy. From you, I felt like maybe you'd have tissues that, you know, were made out of like velvet or some shit. You seem like that kind of a cool.
You say dude. He seems very classy. Is that what you're saying, James?
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know if John Lydon would fucking do that. I'm impressed is what I'm trying to tell you.
He does have tissues great. Made of velvet. They're right behind him.
Yeah, that's right.
Janet, are you the best?
Let me ask you this. While we're on the topic, do you think there will come a time in the near future where you will wash those pillows? Or you're just leaving it as
oh
is.
Oh my God.
First of all, this is bullshit pillow. This is pillow talk.
All right. So, a couple of things I didn't know about you. Ready? I always equated you as a San Francisco dude, right? That's where your main years were. But you were born in Long Island. You were all over the place because your father was in the Army. You're like an Army brat kid. Is that right?
I am. Yeah, I was born in Long Island, and my brothers and sisters didn't come. First of all, so my dad was in the Army, and then we went from New York. I only lived in New York or Long Island about 5 or 6 years old. And then we went right straight to Heidelberg, Germany, went to Vicenza, Italy. Basically went to every school in the United States. I lived in Kansas. I lived in Fort. He was stationed in Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, where the big prison. And then my big story back then, the trustees used to cut my hair, actually.
Really? Like,
I had to go into prison to go get a haircut. Florida, Maryland. My brother and sister was born all over the United States, you know, so.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, a lot of traveling kind of prepared me for what I do now. You know, I've been on the roads for great many, many years.
Most of your life, which is pretty wild. Yeah. And what I liked, I heard that your father was a drummer who opened for Sergio Mendez, which is cool as shit. And is that why is that not right?
I did oh. Actually. Yeah.
I heard that wrong.
No. That's cool. My dad was a drummer.
Okay.
Came out of Cincinnati. He played with Doris Day. He played with the Four Aces. They had this big song called Three Coins and a Fountain back in the 1940s.
Mm-hmm.
They had like a little hit, and he traveled around with them. Mainly, you know, he lived in Cincinnati. He was like a union kind of guy,
mm-hmm.
you know, session kind of drummer. But he played with a lot of people. And then we were stationed in Heidelberg, Germany, late 60s. And Sergio Mendez in Brazil, 66. It could have been 69, you know, or 68, 69, but they kept that name, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they played at the Army Post Theater. And the guy, it was totally, he said, don't bring, you know, no backline, no drums, no guitars or anything like that. We'll support you with all the instruments. So the guy, the drummer had a zebra skin drum set. Not BC at all, man. I mean, look, nobody cried about it then, which is kind of sad, but zebra skin drum set. And I played it, and we didn't have any originals. We just played like some cover tunes and
Creedence. That's very, very cool. But you started as a drummer. When did you make that decision to not be a drummer and be a singer? Because that can't be easy to go from the back to the front. It's not easy in the bedroom either, by the way.
Apparently.
Thank you, Simon.
So my dad taught me the drums, and I really wanted to appease him, you know, I was okay. Just had my one, that was my beat, you know, mm-hmm. only. And, I don't know. I think I was in this band, in Italy, and we had this black singer. We actually had like a couple GIs that were in the band, and I was the youngest kind of kid, you know, playing the drums. And we had a bass player named Lucky President. How about that? And then great name. And the kid didn't come to practice. So I started to, I said, I could, we were playing a song called Get Ready by,
the old one. So Get Ready.
Get ready. Here I come. Actually, Rare Earth did
right.
it. It was a Motown song, but the band Rare Earth did it, and the drummer sang. So mm-hmm. I emulated that situation. So I did that, and I sang pretty good.
Let me ask you, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but at that point, had you like been practicing in the shower? Were you singing back up? Like, did you say, oh, fuck it, I probably could do this?
Well, my mother sings, and my dad also sings as well. I mean, he was a better drummer.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother was not a professional singer, but she was in a bunch of glee clubs and choruses and all that. So the music was all around the house all the time, and she sang. I mean, I didn't have any lessons or anything. I just sang a little, you know, had a really high Michael Jackson type of voice, weird. And my balls didn't drop till I was like 45 years old.
Oh,
fair. So yeah. James is still waiting, so that's
yeah, cool. Yeah. I'm 43, so you're giving me hope these next 2 years. I think sick. Singing like Michael Jackson isn't weird. If he would have wore the glove too, though, that would have been fucking strange. I'm just
especially if it was 69, that would have been weird because they wouldn't know where the glove came from.
Right. And who didn't show up? Was Lucky? Did Lucky not show up? Was that the band?
No. Sorry, I was all over the place here. Lucky President was the bass player. We had this
bass player.
But I remember this. I mean, like this is like late 60s, almost 70s, and Lucky President. All these GIs were in the
Lucky
band.
Lucky President.
Lucky President's fucking awesome name.
The craziest name I've ever heard in my. You couldn't pick like words out of a hat like Burroughs and Bowie did and come up with Lucky President. That's insanity.
It's true. You know, I'm telling you the God's honest truth here, man. You can't make shit up that. Make that shit up. Anyway, blah, 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 blah. So the kid, Donald Sloan, was a singer and he didn't show up. And so I took his place and the band said, and the band was called The Buzz. B-U-C-C-Z, yeah, easy. But anyway, the band basically said, "You suck as a drummer. You're a better singer. You should be a singer." So
that's great.
But it is. It was baby steps, man. Stepping right behind the drums, right to the like, what is this?
So what? Funny. It's such a crazy thing.
What is this now?
That's really wild. I was doing that also, but in a different context. I was doing "What is this?" It was really weird, but yeah. I don't want to get into it.
You guys live for the sex jokes. I love it. You're just like, oh, and then I, and Fudgesicle? No.
Meet Ralph.
Yeah, hello. Yes. Hello there. And then the last thing which I want to touch on your father, which I thought was really, I want to touch your father, very weird. I thought was cool was that he managed your website. He sold your merch. Like, he was so all in on Eric Martin. That's just a very cool thing that he was doing.
I know. I think we talked about that 20 years ago. Yeah. But yeah, he had like that. It was like the first GeoCities. Remember that?
Yeah.
And it said Eric Martin's Pops page, and he did it. He did the page stuff. He did. He made T-shirts for my first Eric Martin band. I was signed to right before I got signed to Elektra Records. My dad was making merchandise for our band, and he came. You know, he didn't come up with the logo EMB, which was the name of it. But you know, he got the band together for a group shot. And
that's so cool.
It is really cool.
All right, let's take a quick second and thank one of our favorite sponsors and one of our biggest supporters here at the SDR show. It's Fume. Fume is a natural inhaler that makes it easy to get the benefits of super plants on the go. Here's how simple it is. Fume is a Canadian-made wooden inhaler with no electronics and cores filled only with the benefit of super plants with no chemicals added. Fume is a natural and portable tool for allergy relief, relaxation, and a great nicotine replacement with a tool that fits right into your pocket. Simply slide your favorite cores into your Fume and breathe in the benefits of Mother Nature. It is just that simple. Check out a variety of blends and their benefits at breathefume.com. That's breathe, B-R-E-A-T-H-E. Fume is spelled F-U-M.com. Breathefume.com. Use the code SDR. Get 10% off your entire order today. There's flavors like bubbly lime. They have lemon berry bliss. There's one that comes with peppermint, eucalyptus, and grapefruit. That's a like energy booster right before a workout. And I know that Lewis has been using them, and seems to be the thing going around the office these days. That's all I can tell you. Head to breathefume.com/SDR. Breathefume.com. Remember, Fume is spelled FUM.com/SDR. And use the code SDR to get 10% off and breathe in the benefits of the world's best super plants today. All right, let's get back into it.
Just to go back, which is interesting, in 76, you were in a band called Kid Courage, which is one of your earlier bands, and you opened for AC/DC at that age. I don't know how old you were then, but that's pretty fucking badass. I would bet, I could be wrong, but I don't know if Mr. Big ever opened for AC/DC, but to say that you did with your first like real band, I guess, that's pretty fucking badass.
Yeah, there was a San Francisco band, Kid Courage. I mean, they kind of had a weird sound. They sounded kind of the Rolling Stones meets Traffic meets the Tubes. I don't know. None of these.
What's going on?
Well, Rolling Stones, you know, but the Tubes and Traffic. I mean, such a weird combo. A lot of, like a rock and roll band, a lot of keyboards and stuff. But yeah, we got. We play with AC/DC. I want to say their last or their first or the beginning of their second tour of America. I mean, we played at a place called Old Waldorf, and right next door is still around. It's called the Punchline, the comedy club. But that little part of that room was the dressing room, and there was no walls or anything like that. It was just a pool table in the room and just a blank four wall. Little stucco building, and they stuck the bands in there. And my band, we're all getting ready to go out to do our opening slot, and the AC/DC guys are hanging out there. And there's like who the hell is this guy? He's like in a schoolboy outfit, a little velvet schoolboy outfit. Okay, we're kind of laughing at him a little bit, which is like, I can't believe I did that. But you know, just going, what's this crap about? And this guy's wearing tight ass. So super tight jeans, no shirt on, he's playing pool, and it's Bon Scott. And I actually played pool with him a little bit, you know.
Oh my god,
that's so cool.
We played, we played two shows. And so the first show, we go out, we do our thing, and they come out, fucking blow the doors off of everything. We just never heard anything like that in my life. Almost sounded like a punk band. Because in San Francisco at that time, there was a lot of punk. The punk movement was hot and heavy. So when AC/DC, and it had this punk rock groove, but they were phenomenal. And I didn't even know who they were when we first, just kind of starting out or something. But I went to Rasputin's record store the next day in Berkeley, got their record, came back. And when I was playing pool with Bond the second night, I was like, oh man. And then you, and I was doing a Chris Farley mode on him. And he goes, I liked you better yesterday. Hilarious. I liked you better yesterday when you were like not so starstruck. I'm like, yeah. And then, no, you can win. You know?
I was going to say, I would bet that Bon Scott probably cheats at pool. That's just my instinct. I can see that. You don't write two different versions of the Jack and don't fucking cheat and then not cheat at pool. Let's be real.
I like to disagree with you. I mean, you can keep that there if you want to, but like that guy had cocksure confidence, man. I mean, he was just total confidence on stage. And then as a pool player playing with this, 14-year-old, 16-year-old kid.
There was a great line, and I think it was in Robin Hood, where he said he was headstrong and cocksure, but it might have been the other way around. It's pretty funny.
Robin Hood men with tights
Robin Hood men in tights, yeah, for sure.
Okay. Oh, the classics.
Yeah, the classics, for sure. Mel Brooks, you got to watch yourself, sir.
Yeah.
Are you sure that Kevin Costner didn't say that in his version?
Yeah, when you said the bands don't go together, it reminded me, I used to be a strip club DJ, and we used to make the girls, they had to write down the type of music they like, right? So you knew what to play for them. And she wrote Madonna, Metallica, etc. What the hell's the third band in that list?
Meatloaf. Anything with an M, dog.
Anything with an M, bro. Music. Yeah.
That's so funny. You know, when my, what was it? When I first got my first solo deal on Capitol Records, I went to England with one of my managers, this guy, Sandy Einstein, and we met all these people and everything. And I was on this record label because I don't think the Capitol was going to sign me in Europe or England or something. And there was a British label called Music for Nations. Mm-hmm. And they put me on a compilation, and it was, and my music at the time was kind of Little Steven, Disciples of Soul kind of thing, kind of half R&B, half rock and roll. And I was on this compilation with Metallica. It said Metallica, Eric Martin. What? Totally left field.
That's so funny.
And all those bit, like when you're saying, what was that third band you were saying?
He said Meatloaf. I said, it was Madonna, Metallica. I was like, what the fuck else should we be playing? I had no idea.
It was all these fucking huge heavy metal bands and then me. Anyway, sorry.
I know that with your Eric Martin band, which is pretty cool, your guitarist ended up going to Y&T. Your drummer ended up going to Tesla. So it's a pretty good lineup of people. And you opened up for like ZZ Top and Journey, and you were on American Bandstand, all that stuff. But the line that made me laugh is you described yourself in an interview once at that time as a poor man's Night Ranger.
I still do it. I still do it when people, we had the two dueling guitar players. Mm-hmm. The keyboard kind of diddly 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 kind of sound, and we came from the same town. I actually kind of grew up with one of the guitar players, this guy Jeff Watson, who came up with that. I don't, your guitar heroes out there, came up with this 5-finger thing or 10-finger guitar thing. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what it was, but when I remember going over to his house when I first got my first album, and I'm knocking on the door, and I'm like, hey, dude, I got my new album. And then he showed me his album, Dawn Patrol. And he goes, we went gold. I'm like, shoving my record. We went gold. I'm like, fuck. Anyway, so poor man's Night Ranger, totally stuck.
And you touched on this a little bit earlier. You always seemed to be a guy that was riding the line between like a rock guy or a soul guy, because you have a lot of R&B background. And I, which made me laugh, is somewhere they asked you, a record label asked you if you wanted to be the next Michael Bolton, which is fucking hilarious to me.
Well, not at the time. I mean, at the time there was nothing going on. Everything I touched turned to shit. Basically, every record deal that I got dropped. I was on Elektra. You know, man, I was on Elektra. They were pumping us big time. We did get the Night Ranger tours and ZZ Top. We played all over the United States in the clubs. We came home and they fired 500 people in their company. And then the new regime came. And anyway, long story short, that happened so many times. I mean, Elektra, Capitol, did a lot of movie soundtracks that, you know, it was Navy SEALs. You know, there was like, or no, Iron Eagle, the poor man's Top Gun. How about that?
You also did a song for Teachers. You wrote a song for you. And my cousin actually wrote that movie. Aaron Russo wrote that movie, which is funny.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, I forgot that part of our history here. Yeah, Teachers, Nick Nolte was in the movie and everything. But yeah, I got contacted by your uncle.
It's my mother's first cousin. So it's a stupid term. In America, you call that first cousin once removed, which is an idiotic term that nobody uses, because if his kid would be my second cousin, but he's and my mother are first cousin.
So what are we calling it now? Cousin?
We'll just say cousin is good enough. Yeah.
So your cousin contacted my manager, Herbie Herbert, who managed Journey and later on Steve Miller, Europe, Roxette, even Enough's Enough at one time. And contacted him to, you know, to say, you know, we would like to get, I think every time they contacted Herbie, they wanted to get Journey, and they go, well, Journey doesn't want to do it. Let's let Eric do it. Hey, let Mikey do it. So, I wrote a song with Neil Sean, called I Can't Stop the Fire. Mm-hmm. And it was like this scene with Ralph Macchio was in it too. We're talking about the classics. Anyway, Ralph Macchio was in it. He was doing a fire drill scene and he pulls his fire thing. So I wrote the song, I Can't Stop the Fire. And me and Neil, and actually Steve Smith, at the time, Randy Jackson was in the band. So Steve Smith, Randy Jackson, Neil Sean, I think maybe Paul Pesco played on it. And Vince Welnick, actually, the keyboard player for the Tubes, all Bay Area guys. We played on it. And it did really great. And actually, a little quick backstory on that. I went to the premiere and I'm sitting at this table. And I mean, Ian Hunter and all these great players are on it, you know. And so we went to the movie. And we're watching, like right before our scene, there was a song called Interstate Love Affair with Night Ranger. This is not Payback, but this is kind of funny, actually. So the whole Night Ranger band comes in. And they're behind us, and me and Neil are sitting in front, and they're wearing the long leather jacket, you know, leather coats, and Interstate Love Affair comes on, and they play like seconds of the song, which is fucking Kiss of Death, seconds, and they like all get up and leave, and then the second song was I Can't Stop the Fire, and they played pretty much the whole song. Me and Neil are high fiving, and I'm going to make it. He was like, yeah. Actually, another little story is like when we're going to that premiere, I was thinking, this is my big break, man. We're going on the red carpet and they're putting the microphones in our face and they're talking to Neil. And I'm standing behind Neil. Nobody talked to me. I was like, is that Neil's girlfriend? You know, you know, but anyway, we did it. And subsequently from that movie soundtrack, that's where Billy Sheehan
is it? Because I heard different things about that, about how Mr. Biggs assembled, right?
That's it.
One story I heard that Mike Varney of Shrapnel reached out to you and asked you, do you want to be a singer in a band? Another story I heard was that Billy Sheehan directly called you and said, do you want to be in a band with me?
Well, all the above. So the Teachers thing and then Billy, but right in the middle was Mike Varney.
Okay.
I've known Mike for years. He's a producer, guitar collector, just an all around great human. And he called me up and we chat over the years and stuff in between my failures. And he called me up and asked me, you know, hey, first of all, we were talking about Michael Bolton and we got kind of off track. Yeah. But during that teacher's thing, and it wasn't going good. And then a publishing company and also Herbie were all getting together saying, look, we got to do something. We want to do something for this kid because he's talented, but he doesn't know where he's going to rock, R&B, and who's out there that does that. Michael Bolton, Paul Young, Daryl Hall. We want to do something with him for that. And they were talking about Michael. I bring up Michael Bolton because I knew Michael Bolton back in the day when he was a rocker.
Yeah, I remember when I first heard him when he did the Sitting on the Dock of the Bay acoustic song on Howard Stern in the early 80s. And I was like, who the fuck is this guy? He had such a powerful voice. It was great amazing. Voice.
I mean, look, you know, you want to, I've even said this before a couple of times where, like, you know, he went into a smarmy kind of thing, you know, because the whole rock and roll thing was I did idolize the guy back in the day. I mean, I wrote songs with him and hung out with him. He was a super funny guy, great singer. And then he went off into the Scarves and the Engelbert Humperdinck kind of thing, you know, more power to him. And I mean, he was always a sweet guy. And I don't mean, maybe I've taken the piss at him a couple times, but I don't want to do that.
Right.
How is he as a pool player? That's the important question.
As a pool player?
And does he cheat in pool?
That son of a bitch is cheating at pool.
I think the scarf would get in the way. I think the scarf would get in the way. That's what I think.
I think he's another cocksure, confident kind of guy. I mean, name somebody else and I'll tell you that guy cheats. cocksure confidence, wiping his face on the fucking pillow. Basically, my career is over.
No, this is the best. I'm gonna sniper in random names. Desmond Child, pool player or not. Let's fucking go. Joe Perry, I want answers, man.
Desmond Child, probably an amazing pool player.
Pillow fish wiper or pool player? Which one do you think he's better at?
First of all, he'd probably admit it with the pillow part. But anyway, so the Michael Bolton thing, that didn't work out. And then that's when Mike Varney called me up and, you know.
And then soon after, Billy called you and then the band.
Well, no, Mike called me and said, hey, do you want to get in a band? I'm like, fuck, I want to do anything.
Right.
You know, I got like all these record labels and I got a lot of experience and a lot of history and all that. And I met a lot of people, but still sleeping on my dad's couch vibe. And Mike Varney said, you know, hey, there's a guy looking for a lead singer. You ever heard of Billy Sheehan? And I go, no, I never have. But I did go, is he the guy that's on that Yankee Rose video with David Lee Roth, bass player? And they're all running around and everything. And he goes, yeah, he's on the other line. I told him about you. He's notorious for that. And Billy gets on and he goes, hey, I heard your song, I Can't Stop the Fire. And from Mike, actually, I think Mike even said it to him. So I have Mike to thank for all my success.
That's cool. That's great. I read that also at one point you auditioned for Van Halen, you auditioned for Rainbow, or invited to audition is maybe the right way to put it, but also that you were in Toto for less than 2 weeks.
Yes.
Yes to all those.
No, I didn't. I
said invited to audition, not actually audition for the other two, for Van Halen and Rainbow.
I was invited to audition for Rainbow through an old manager of mine that they were looking for singers and it was a location thing. I didn't have it. Man, I was a struggling guy in L.A. I didn't have any money to do anything, and they weren't sending me a plane ticket, so that didn't work out. And I was invited to audition for Van Halen. And I talked to Eddie on the phone a few times. Great, you know, sweet guy, great people. But I was really gung-ho about it and really excited about it. And I flew down to LA and actually during that time, I was hanging out with Neil Schon a lot. We were in L.A. and I was staying at the Sportsman's Lodge, which was like right down the mountain from, you know, 5150. Mm-hmm. And I'm staying there and I'm talking to the guy and it's raining outside. And man, I know what, I just got complete cold feet. I immediately thought, and I've said this before, but I go, man, those are pretty, Eric, you're stepping into some mighty big clown shoes, you know, to join Van Halen. I felt I could do it singing wise, but I wasn't cocksure and confident. Even after all those years of touring with all these bands and making all these records, I don't think I was ready to take on the world.
So just so I know, so timeline wise, it was after Sammy left and before Gary came in, it was like in that time period?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. I think so.
And then with Toto, you did get the gig, but then they decided you didn't have the gig.
Yeah. Yeah. That would have been an ideal situation for me too, because, you know, the hybrid kind of music, rock and roll and R&B. Yeah, Steve Lukather played on a couple of my solo albums and brought the whole band down up to San Francisco to see me play at some little club. And it was a great day. Boz Skaggs was there too. And I'm like, man, this is the next guy. And I went to LA and I practiced with him for about 10 days, sang all the songs, Hold the Line and 99, Georgie Porgy, Africa, the whole thing, you know? And I felt really comfortable being around them. Mm-hmm. So some of my true colors probably came out, some of my bad colors. I didn't drink a lot back then, but, you know, we went out to these clubs and carafes of wine would be coming to the table. And I'm a lightweight, man. I'm just like, you know, I say I'm Italian, but am I really? Because I get drunk really fast. And just sucking on the wine. And the reason why I said that, and I don't know why I'm outing myself, but all these years I thought it was only, you know, like everybody loved me in the band, but Jeff didn't care for me as well. He thought I was too green. There was other things too. I went into the studio and they were doing this album called Fahrenheit. And I went into the studio with Dave Page. It was Dave Page's house, I think it was called The Manor. And we went in and I was singing this Fahrenheit song, but I couldn't get the funk timing of it. And they go, no, it's okay. It's okay. They give me enough rope to hang myself. But, Steve Lukather goes, hey, why don't you sing this song? I just did a vocal track for it, mm-hmm. just like a practice track. I should know the right words for it. I'm nervous. It was a song called I'll Be Over You. I'll be over you. Really huge hit song for Toto that Steve Lukather sang. I think this is one of his first kind of big, shining moments actually as a guitar player and a vocalist. Mm-hmm. But I sang it in the studio and I kept going, man, this is not me. It's you. It's not me. It's you. It's like passing the buck. Anyway, long story short, I'm in this club and we're watching all these bands play, all these jazz guys and all these, you know, guys at Toto. Toto was a session band back in the day. They played on everybody's records. Mm-hmm. So
weren't they in Boz Skaggs band, right? I think that's right.
Yeah, Boz Skaggs. I mean, they know everybody. Huh. And so we were at this function where all these groups are playing and the wine's coming to the table and I'm just getting a little pissed. I'm getting like, shit, shimmit. Popeye and the cartoons, you know, this like every time they got drunk or smoked a pipe or something like that. They look like, this is all in my head right now. I don't know. This is not for you. No, I watched this one cartoon back in the day and it was like, Popeye gave his pipe to I don't know why I'm talking about this right now, but this is funny. Took this pipe and he gave it to one of the bad guys. The guy smoked the pipe and his eyes turned like this. So,
right.
It was a great. It would be like Tombstones, right? When that shit happened.
Yeah, exactly. It was kind of like maybe the first Reefer Madness cartoon. I don't know. So, a couple months ago, maybe it was, Steve Lukather wrote a book, and somebody showed me a passage of the book, and it said, Eric Martin. I'm paraphrasing this, but like Eric Martin was a guy that we were really looking into. He had a great voice and all that stuff, and practically hung out with us, practiced with us. But he got a little drunk at the table. And first of all, man, that's killed me listening to it because I mean he was just being truthful and shit. But all these years. I thought, like, after those 10 days, we went to a restaurant. All the Toto guys were all sitting around this. We were at Michelli's, which I think has some history, but we're at Michelli's restaurant in North Hollywood. And each guy went out to have a smoke break, but just to, like, vote on me or something.
Oh, really? That's funny.
Yeah. And Steve said, and he goes, everybody likes you, but, Jeff thinks you're a little too green. Apparently,
maybe he meant your face from drinking so much.
Maybe he did. I mean, it's kind of a crushing blow to my ego a little bit. I thought, and I didn't make it. The drummer thought I was just too young or something like that. But I think that had something to do with it. But then also, it was kind of a crushing blow.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah.
A couple other quick things.
Like, if I would have known then what I know now.
You would have had two less drinks?
Billy Sheehan probably would have went, I don't want that drunk. I don't know how to work with that drunk. Anyway.
All right, before we go any further, what else can I say? But holy shit, do we love Blue Chew. You know Blue Chew's chewables. They are the same active ingredient as Viagra and Cialis, but in a chewable form at a fraction of the cost. And they help us all, well, by all I mean men, get harder, stronger erections, and combat all forms of erectile dysfunction. They've also been a sponsor for a long time on the show. We love the sponsors that support the show, so support them. Blue Chew is an online prescription service. No doctor's visits, no weird conversations, no waiting in line at the pharmacy. It ships directly to your door in a discreet package, and you can simply sign up at bluechew.com. You consult with one of their online licensed medical providers, and within a few minutes, you will hopefully be approved, and then you receive your prescription within a few days. It's all done online. And if you don't like swallowing pills, as I said, it is chewable, it is fast, and it is fun. It's BlueChew.com, the best chewables for your erectile dysfunction. Use the code SDR. You only pay $5 shipping, and you get your first month free. $5 shipping, first month free, BlueChew.com. Use the code SDR. All right, let's get back into it. I have a couple other things to talk about. I know we talked about via email that you might be able to perform a song. I know you're feeling sick, but do you think that's possible or no?
Fuck, man. Like what?
I mean, I'll say this. I mean, it's funny is that it's weird to say like, well, yeah, what song do you...
I've outed myself as a pillow wiper, a drunk... And most of the interviews I do, they have kind of Oprah moments and then you have a little tears here and there, or they ask like the soup, what's your favorite color? And I mean, along that line of interviews and stuff, you guys didn't say shit. And I just like opened up like a can of fucking tuna.
It's because of Shannon's boobies. That's why.
Be who you is. Wipe your nose on whatever you want.
If I'm going to be honest with you, right, with far as songs, right, there's a song that I love.
I swear to God, if it's to be with you, you're a dead man.
No, it's not. That's not my song. My song you wrote on the first album called Big Love, which I love. You can't do that one right now. But I will say this.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a playing ability. It's like, my mind is twisted. No.
Okay, fair enough.
Pick something a little lower down in the vocal food range.
I'm trying to think. I mean, I love another one. I love is "Had Enough." I'm going on the first record, but
"Had Enough." I don't play that. That's a Billy Sheehan song. Pick another song.
How about this? How about you pick a song instead of me looking like an idiot over and over again?
Let's see. La 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 la. Wait. This is this live?
No.
I'm like, now that I've lost everything to you, say you wanna start something new. It's breaking my heart, you're leaving. Baby, I'm grieving. If you wanna leave, take good care. Hope you have a lot of nice things to wear. A lot of nice things turn bad out there. It's hard to get by just upon a smile. Ooh, baby, baby, it's a wild world. I always remember you like a child girl. That's about as much as you're gonna get.
I dig it. Let me ask you, that was great. You sounded great. By the way, let me ask you this question about it. Do you have a love-hate relationship with To Be With You? Because it's so omnipresent and everybody wants that song. And I'm sure every record executive ever said, we want another To Be With You. Does it get to where, like, you know, that question of the song that made Mr. Big big, is it a love-hate relationship with that song?
It's not a love-hate relationship. It's more of a, like, I love that song. I love it. If people only remember me for that song, I'd welcome it. I'd love it. The love hate part is that when I do it, I have to be perfect. You know, I have to be like spot on, just like everybody heard it in 1992. And remember I told you about the balls dropping part? Yeah, it's way up there. Actually, it starts off really, you know, like, hold on, little girl, very easy. And then the chorus, I'm the one who wants to be with you. But then it like, I'm the one, you know, that kind of shit. Oy, yay, yay, man. That is like my right leg lifts off the floor. You know, it's pretty difficult. So you have to be spot on.
Right. And I get that.
That's not really love, hate. It's more like, Love, panic.
Love it.
And now, the band broke up, Mr. Big broke up in 2002, and then got back a few years later.
If it was a television show, it'd be like a few hours. Right.
But now, again, in my research, I heard two different things. One, I heard that the band reunited on stage somewhere without you and had such a good time, they called you and asked you to be back and do the band again. And then another thing I heard was, your son's desire to play bass led to you calling Billy, led to him sending a left-handed bass to you. That rekindled the friendship. Which one was it, or was it both?
the cart before the horse, or the horse before the cart. Yeah.
Well, the horse before the cart is the way it's supposed to go.
I called egg, chicken. I don't know. You see where I'm going with this. Like, I reached out to Billy. I hadn't talked to him in a good 5-6 years. I'd seen Paul a couple times at clinics. I talked to Pat every couple months. We were still, you know, there was no bad blood or anything. And I did reach out to Billy. I mean, me and Billy did butt heads back in the day, you know, and maybe that was the reason for the demise of the band, or that was just constant work schedule. Once you also have a hit, you're working your ass off. And, you know, it's not a boo-hoo moment. I mean, it's just, it was really, really, it was super hard. And then we had successes overseas. I had to say that five times. And so it was constant work schedule. We were always together, like almost, mm-hmm. almost like marriage, you get it, or almost like a lockdown in the COVID situation, where you're just, anyway. So yeah, we did butt heads back in the day, but out of the blue, my son wanted to learn how to play bass guitar, not guitar, just bass. Mm-hmm. His dad plays guitar. His mom plays drums. I sing. Maybe you want to maybe do one of those three things. No, I want to play bass guitar. And for some reason, I immediately thought of Billy and I reached out almost like I was reaching out for my son, but also as an olive branch, mm-hmm. To see if, just we could get to talking again. So I reached out to him and you're right. Yeah, the story goes. My son plays left-handed. So I go, my son, he's barely 7 years old. He'd like to play some bass guitar. Does Yamaha make a bass guitar? That's who he was endorsing at the time. Yamaha make a bass guitar for left-handed. He goes, I don't think we do, but I'll look around. So he was in Japan and he went, I think it was Japan. He went to a pawn shop, got a left-handed kind of bass, the knobs are different places, and kind of painted it, got it all set up, actually put one of his Billy Sheehan decals on it that he used to have, this like it was a skeleton with this hat, kind of a Australian bush hat on. It's kind of cool. And he's stuck the thing on, and it was supposed to be like, I just reached out, it was for my son's birthday, but it came at Christmas time. So it was like a complete surprise attack. And it came at Christmas time, big box, and a couple DVDs of Billy doing an instructional video with a pamphlet, and then we had the music stand, and it was kind of surreal here at Christmas time. I hadn't heard or talked to Billy in 5-6 years, like right. I said. And here's my son playing bass and listening to the first steps of bass. And to hear his voice in our little next to our Christmas tree, it was kind of cool. So I took a few pictures. I sent it to him. I wrote this huge email and said, man, you made my son so happy. And I think I said the words, man, I'll never forget this in my whole life. You've done something so great for my son. And he started reaching out a little bit like, hey, how you doing? What have you been up to? Blah, blah, blah. And I go, funny enough, I was in Italy, in Naples, actually, and I was playing this gig with Richie Kotzen, another Mr. Big alumnus. Right. So Richie's playing, and playing drums with Richie at the time was Pat Torpey. I just out of the blue, here we are. I'm on tour. Hey, okay, you got this gig in this amphitheater in Naples, and you're opening to Richie Kotzen. I'm like, okay. So I get there and there's Pat, and we had one of those Blues Brothers moments where we're like, we got to get the band back together. God, And that happened. And I go, wow, I did this thing with Billy and the bass thing. And then I think Pat ran it to Billy, and I told Billy a little bit about, I saw Pat. And this is like a Wizard of Oz moment. Paul Gilbert is playing at the House of Blues in Los Angeles. And Richie Kotzen is opening to him with Pat Torpey playing drums. And Billy talked to me and he goes, hey, I'm thinking about going down and checking him out. So he goes down, checks him out. They end up playing this song that we did a couple covers here and there, mm-hmm. but our first one was a live version of
30 Days in the Hole.
30 Days in the Hole by Humble Pie on our first album. Right. Kind of bold, but it was great. But they did 30 Days in the Hole. Everybody's looking at each other. Richie's probably going, do I have a place in this? No, not. But anyway, Paul's like, man, we called me the next day. It was the NAMM show. I think within that week, we went to, me, Pat, and Billy went to see Paul at the NAMM show play with his band. And ironically, they played a Mr. Big song, which was like, what? We're right here. Anyway, and then we got to talking and went over to Paul's house, had a meal, toasted champagne, and got the band back together. And that was great. That 2009.
I love the story that you wrote that first album in 8 days, which is just awesome when you hear stories
first
like
album,
that.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. We were in love. We were in love.
One quick question. I never heard the answer to this. Where did the name actually come from?
Pat. Everybody threw names into the hat. Mine were pretty bad. I wrote a song.
Based on the buzz, I'd say yeah.
Well, first, yeah. Oh, you're going to judge me? You're going to judge me for a 6-year-old or maybe a 10-year-old? Oh, fuck. Anyway. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, now I'm like, I'm busting your balls on this, but no, it's going to get bad. So I wrote a song on the first album called My Kind of Woman, and it had a lyric in it that said magic to burn. And I go, magic to burn. And they go, you're an idiot. And then Paul denies this to this day, but I swear to God, I no one could think of this name except him. And I know I heard it with just him. Mars Needs Women went
oh,
into
really? That's funny.
And I, you know, to today's world, it would have been cooler, or like maybe like fresh into the 90s, right. It would have been cooler. But
what came first, you know, Mr. Big, the band, or Mr. Big from Sex and the City? I wonder which one was first, as far as like
Sarah Jessica Partner about. Parker, or whatever her name is, or what's her name?
Sarah Jessica Parker.
Yeah, yeah. Was she even born yet? No, no.
Yeah, it was 89. 88 was that show started. So I don't, but Mr. Big wasn't in the first season or two. So I don't know which one was first.
No, that show's later than
that. Yeah. Christopher.
Is it? I don't
know. That show's in the late 90s.
Christopher
lasted 10 years.
Still on Law and Order.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
Hold on. Shannon's looking it up. Shannon, what year did it start, Sex and the City? I could be wrong. I don't mind being wrong.
Also, little known fact, the Mr. Big's character initially was supposed to be the Buzz. So, I mean, there it is.
You know what?
You can't get away from
it. Heard it.
You can't see it, Chan?
I'm a callback machine.
That's fucked
up. Okay, also, my nose didn't run the whole goddamn day, and then I see you with that, and now I got to get these sons of bitches out. I'm sniffling, man.
Mr. Big's first appearance in Sex and the City was in season 6, which was 2003.
Okay, but season 6 is 2003. Yeah. Go back 6 years.
It's not 1988.
It's 1988. I'm wrong. Okay, good. I'm wrong. Fair. I'll take it. I'm fine.
No, Jesus Christ.
I'm actually proud that
it started in 66.
I'm proud that I don't know Sex and the City history. It's good that I don't know it.
And you've dated a lot of broads. I mean, you should know that show. Every girl I've ever gone out with has forced me to sit through episodes.
We're going
to
do
honest, I'm a Samantha.
I'm going to run through a couple of things quickly. Then we're going to do the first and let him go. But what's crazy is you are such a busy guy. I mean, pretend COVID's not existing for a moment. But I know you're out like 90 shows a day, a year, 90 or 100 shows a year.
Yeah.
Some of the things you did, which I found fascinating, you know, you did those songs where you sang like generally girls' songs, it's called Mr. Vocalist, where you'd put out big hits. You did a few of those, which is pretty wild. I listened to a few of those songs, 3 of them, right?
Yeah.
You did the backstage travel with our boy Jeff Tate not that long ago, right, which is cool. You wrote songs for karaoke games, video games, an MMA group. You're a busy man. Even a beer commercial in Japan, you definitely kept yourself very active over the years, which is pretty wild to see.
Where's the money?
All right, so Shannon, let's do this quickly. And also, by the way, what I think is funny is I know you got shit when you did that Rush cover for some reason because Rush fans are lunatics.
I'm sorry. The Mission.
Right.
The Mission was one of my favorite Rush songs on, I think, Signals. And oh my God, I got so much. I got the corn from all the Rush fans, man.
But I do love that Rush thanked Mr. Big when you went on tour with them because thank you for bringing girls to the show, which I think is. So obviously awesome. Better. That's so great. All right, Channel, we're going to do the first right now.
The first time did drugs, had sex.
The name of the show is Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, the SDR show. We ask every guest since the dawn of time their first experience with all three, but we start with rock and roll, and we mean the first concert you went to on your own volition.
First concert I ever went to, okay, this is, can I have a little sidebar with it too? Okay, so my first concert, my mother took me and my girlfriend to go see America.
Okay, I remember right? them.
But within the same week, I hitchhiked to San Francisco to go to Winterland and by myself and see Queen. So come on, you got to give it to me.
That's great. I'll take that one. That's a good one. It's a very good first one. How old were you?
High school. So okay. 16, 17.
Wow, okay. 16. And now the first drug you ever did, ideally after pot, unless pot wasn't the first drug you ever did.
It was acid, actually. It was.
How old were you?
Around the same time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It was Orange Sunshine. That's what it was. I did it with a couple guys that just got out of Marine Corps boot camp. And we're like up on this hill with this gigantic looking gallows tree. And it was, you know, they say like, you know, you take acid, your first experience, you're like, you're laughing and you're having a great time and colors. Dude, I felt like I was in a war zone. It wasn't good.
I'm sorry to hear that. And now the first time you had sex.
Around the same time. No, a little later, actually. Okay. I want to say like 18, 17, 18. First time I had sex with, what do you want to know? Her name?
Was it a girl that you were courting for a while? Was it someone you met on a like last minute, you know?
She was a neighborhood girl. Her name was Tina. And do I have to get into detail?
No, you don't have to get into details.
It was, I didn't know what I was doing. But I didn't, and first of all, I didn't know what I was doing. And I'm starting at the feet. And I'm going to the legs. And I'm going to the then. And she goes, hey, come up and kiss me. And I went up to kiss her. And I'm like, Houston, we're in. Anyway.
And then the one that we asked this to rock stars, Gilby Clark was the first person to bring it up, which is the first time he had sex. Because he was who he was. Is that what you mean? Like rock star sex, he said.
Is there one
that jumps out in your mind?
Rock star sex?
You know, like, oh, you're Eric Martin, so this is why I'm doing this.
No. I've been married
a long time. But...
I've been married a couple times, so I'm a serial husband.
Okay. Nothing jumps out at you. It doesn't have to.
They all jumped out. They were all fucking... Great. Two great marriages of sex. Great. Loved it. Nothing. No rock star sex. I watched everybody have rock star sex around me. I was, you know, faithfully, I was faithful. So.
Oh, look at you. Look at nice, sweet Eric Martin.
Yeah. How about the first time you had sex because you were friends with Lucky President? Look, I'm not fluid, but I'd blow a guy who's friends with Lucky President. I'm just saying it out there. I mean,
hey.
What are you gonna do?
I don't know. You know, you're a comedian in the world of comedy and everything that. But like, you know, you don't have like websites called Blabbermouth and bullshit like that where they will only take. I'd blow a guy. Dot, dot, dot. You know me.
Please, James would love that press.
That I said, drunk, hello, bite, motherfucker. Yeah.
We got it worse. I mean, comedy journalists are the worst. I'm probably done after this. Me saying that, I'm done.
You're not done.
I have to move to Boise, Idaho.
Comedy journalists, you're dead. You're fucking dead.
Just to recap,
you are out with, I always pretend as the world is open, you are going out with the Trickster Boys. You're doing that, a lot of those dates. You're still doing...
Traveling to Boston tomorrow, playing New Bedford, Mass on Thursday, and then Friday is Shannon, please look at my stats.
But meanwhile, your website has not been updated in a while. I'll tell you that.
I got it. You know, after this So a really good friend of mine passed away. This guy, Gary Corbett, a keyboard player for Cinderella. And I put.
Wait, the Cinderella. Didn't also Jeff died from Cinderella? Bar, yeah.
But wow. Gary Corbett was their keyboard player, a road keyboard player for a long, long time. And he was sick. And I put up like a GoFundMe page and I put it on my Facebook. And then he passed away. And something, I don't know, some weird Facebook moment or something, it's stuck on this GoFundMe page on my Facebook. So it hasn't been up there, but I have another page. Oh, shit. Am I out?
No, Shannon's showing you where you're playing. These are your upcoming shows.
You're playing in Frenchtown, New Jersey.
Are you going through my underwear drawer now? What's going on here?
The screen, we're showing this, but I would say this is on Songkick, but also there's a Facebook page for you as well, and there's other places.
Yeah, there's stuff. So yeah, playing New Bedford, Mass, and then Rochester, New York, and then Frenchtown, New Jersey, where those knuckleheads are from. That
should be a good show with Trickster, New Jersey. That's got to be crazy.
Get out of my computer. What are you doing? Are you in my... Jesus, scaring the shit out of me. I think it's like... Apple help or some shit.
Did I leave anything off that you want to plug before we go around the room and do plugs, sir?
I'm doing another one of those backstage pass travel. You got to read about it. Got to go on. It's just backstage.
It's pretty cool. Travel. Yeah, I know it through Jeff and his wife, and it's just really cool because it's like going on tour with musicians through wineries and small gigs and big gigs. It's just like a really fun thing.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's not like a. It is kind of a Monsters Rock cruise in a way. I mean, you're going on, you're traveling around in these vans and going to these, high class French restaurants, hiking all over Montana. Mm-hmm. You go from Seattle, Washington, play a couple shows, Idaho, Montana. Montana is gorgeous. That's a rock and roll heaven right there.
That's cool. That's Backstage Pass. It's really good. Jeff Tate and you, and it's really just a very cool vibe. Jeff started it a couple years ago.
And fans, fans.
You get to travel with the musicians. It's pretty wild. James, your plugs.
Yo, man, you got to check me out on the Instagrams. The James Madden. Get a piece of that. Commissioner Comedy Podcast. Get some of that. It's all about the passion of comedy. I got a new project coming. We'll announce it soon, baby. And in October, the Check Spot album is dropping. Me doing stand-up, answer questions from a drunk audience while they pay their bills, because fuck it, why not, baby? I'm a comedy ninja, and all right? And my next album is going to be a tribute to Lucky President and Tissue.
That
was for you, Eric.
Please use Lucky President in your set somehow. Hey, I got this friend of mine, Lucky President. That's it.
Yo, I'm going to get that tattooed right here on this meat, right here, dog, right on this lobster meat.
I wish you would have got a lot more time, a chance to talk than me, man, because you're a lot more interesting than I am.
Don't be so sure. Shannon, you're
I didn't write a hit single, baby. Come on.
Yeah.
You can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is. Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts.
All right. We do this every time as we wrap up. We try and guess, does our guest believe in ghosts or not believe in ghosts? I have my guess. You have your guess locked in?
Yeah,
I'm going to say no.
I say yes.
I was going to go no, but I saw how he moved his head. I saw a poker tell. I'm saying yes.
And what's the answer?
Yes.
Ah, shit. First time I'm wrong.
James, it doesn't count because you cheated. I'm the only one that got it right.
No, it's not cheating. It's a fucking poker player. God damn it. He's holding two fucking aces.
Shannon,
this is what I think about your cheating right there.
They're all here. They're all here. All the ghosts of Eric Martin's past. They're all in right
now. Here's a tell, though, too. He's Italian. Italians, for the most part, it's the old. I was raised Italian. It's all the Maloik shit. Everyone's dead relatives looking at them when they finger. Like, it's there. Yeah. So all everyone right. believes all right. in
I read
shit.
It wrong. I read the room
shit.
Wrong. What do you want me to tell you? My first time. All right. Follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other podcast, Good Sugar Podcast, the Health and Wellness Show, comes out every Monday. I was honored, dude. I got to bring you up on stage once with Mr. Big at the M3 show, which was awesome. And if you would just, this would make Shannon shit herself. Just do the easy opening part of To Be With You. Just do it on the guitar, 30 seconds of it.
Hold on, little girl. Show me what he's done to you. Stand up, little girl.
broken heart can't be that bad.
Perfect.
It's through. It's favorite twin, John Shimmy again with
the
gap.
And by the way, greens and blues. I always wonder what the fuck that meant. I looked it up. It's envy and sadness. Is that really what you mean? All right. That was awesome, dude. We're going to add a song to the playlist that we do every week. Is there an Eric Martin song, an Avantasia song, anything you want us to add to the playlist that we add every week?
Yes. Avantasia is a power German rock and roll band with all these great singers in it, with me and Jeff Tate and all this stuff. But I do a song with Jeff. Twisted Mind.
Twisted Mind. We'll add that to the SDR Show playlist. And you can get that on the SDRShow.com/playlist.
The live version of it.
Okay.
Can you do it. Can you get that? Twisted Mind.
All right. Thank you so much for coming on the show, man. It was a blast having you.
Sorry to take it so long, Ralph. You know, I had to vet you.
That's fine. All right. See you soon on the SDR. Bye. Right.
You've been listening to the SDR Show.